Blog Talk Radio.
Universe. It is Thursday, December 11, 2008. My name is Doug Kelly. I'm here with my co-host, Grant. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug. How's it going? Welcome, everybody.
It's going good. Tonight, we are going to focus on leadership and management of a paranormal research group. Some stuff to share with you based on the brand new CFPI course, the Certified Founding Paranormal Investigator course, which is available at paranexusacademy.org and has been for the last few weeks. And the home study version, I am now in the process of formatting the pages for publication, so it should be available in the next few days as a home study course. But you can still take it at paranexusacademy.org. At any rate, appreciate everybody joining us tonight. We've got several people in the chat room, and if you're not in the chat room, we'd love to have you there. Also, love to take your calls tonight. If you've got any questions on group leadership, group management, people management, if you've got difficult people on your team and you're not sure how to deal with them or connect with them or resolve it, we can answer all those questions because, ask Grant, I know everything except for that which I do not know, right?
Absolutely, Doug. And you really, really like people who agree with you all the time.
Don't crack me up, except for when I don't. All right.
It's what makes a great leader, right, Doug? Only people that agree with you.
That's right. That's one of
Have you ever come across any group leaders who have been like that?
Oh, no. I mean, yes. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, maybe.
Never. Tell the truth now. Never. We've never come across a bad group leader.
No.
No,
nor a bad manager.
Absolutely.
A bad manager.
God, every boss I've ever had has been just like the greatest thing since sliced bread.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess we're done with this show then, aren't we? Because there's no need to talk about it.
We told our audience all they need to know. So there you go.
All right.
But seriously, no, it's the course, the way it's designed, it will help people who are interested in finding or getting a group off the ground. It'll give them all the tools that they need in order to get that going and to help manage their folks and make it successful.
Absolutely. You know, this the CFPI course is a full-blown leadership course in a paranormal wrapper. It's just been adapted to a paranormal research group, but it is a full-blown leadership course. In fact, it's going to be offered as a business-styled leadership course in the next month or two. So it's a great course, and it's great because, of course, I wrote it. Duh. That was your cue to laugh.
Of course, we all know that.
Yeah. Now you're just sucking up. Okay. Let's talk about some of these different things.
Feed your monkey.
That's. I love that. Yeah. Feed his monkey. He'll shut up. All right. If you've got questions, call us. The number is 347-945-7799. I'm going to put it in the chat room as we speak. And if you have a headset on your computer, you can also use that little click to talk button, and we'd love to hear from you, or you can ask questions in the chat room. So, with that having been said, let's talk about group management and leadership and why it's an important issue. It's a critical issue. As Grant was alluding to, the business world is just rife with bad management. Now, not all managers are bad or poor managers, and not all leaders are poor leaders, but there are so many of these managers running around that create more problems than they solve, and I'm sure that our listeners have worked for them or come into contact with them. The idea is to not to bring that kind of management or leadership into a paranormal research group. So I'm going to just pick some different mistakes that founders and directors make, and I'm just going to talk about them briefly. By the way, our show tonight is 1 hour, so we will talk about this throughout the hour, and again, love to take your questions. Let's start with one, and this, by the way, this is 21 leadership mistakes founders make, and it is in Chapter 3 of the CFPI course. The first one is assuming that because the founder or director thinks something makes sense, everyone else should too. You ever come across that before? You're the boss or an aggressive type boss thinks, hey, it makes sense to me. You know, you're just stupid if it doesn't make sense to you. And that is a problem. It is a problem with some managers. Number two, not communicating. I could spend the rest of this hour, the next one, on communication, and we can talk about that, take your questions. Here's the big deal. This was in the CPI course, too. Lack of communication will kill any relationship, period. That is a huge nugget that not only applies to paranormal research groups, but it also applies to your personal relationships, your life, your business, your job. Lack of communication will kill any relationship. We can all remember perhaps good friends that we had in high school or in college, and we haven't seen or talked to them in years, maybe even decades. You know, what kind of relationship do we have with them? Well, the fact is that we don't have any relationship with them. Now, it doesn't mean we couldn't rekindle that relationship. It just means lack of communication kills relationships. This is the number one source of all mistakes, failures, and problems, lack of communication. When we don't hear from somebody, we start kicking into imagination gear. Our imaginations can run wild. We can start figuring out all kinds of fantastic things. Well, maybe they don't like me anymore, or maybe they're ticked off at me, or maybe this, maybe that. Communication is a crucial factor, and as a founder or director of your group, you need to be communicating regularly with your team members in some fashion. Now, if you've got a team members area or a forum of some sort, that is part of it. Contacting them, talking with them on the phone, of course, seeing them on investigations, asking how they're doing, but that communication is crucial. If you don't have it, I guarantee your team will fall apart. And it won't take long either to do that. Lack of communication will kill any relationship. And by the way, anybody out there ever been in a toxic relationship that needed to die? You want to know how to kill any relationship instantly and permanently? Stop communicating. And I'm talking about no phone, no personal face-to-face, no voicemail, no text messages, no emails, no mental telepathy, nothing. The instant that you stop communicating is the instant that that relationship is over with. That's how powerful this whole concept is. So communicate with your people. Any thoughts, Grant? You just jump in anytime you want.
The thing of it is that when you're doing this, and you and I have kicked this around for a long time, we're doing this on a voluntary basis, and we're doing it because we love it, and we like the thrill of the hunt in the sense that we're pursuing something that, you know, is very elusive and requires a lot of discipline in the sense that it's not something that – well, the best way I can illustrate it is to point out the number of people, and I know this will resonate with you, Doug, that we've seen come and go in the last almost 3 years now, where people come in, they're very enthusiastic, they really want to go on an investigation, they really want to contribute. And then when the reality sinks in about all of the non-glamorous things that we have to do, then the communication dwindles, and then the next thing you know, they've decided that they're no longer interested. Or, that person may have come into the group with their own philosophy intact. And it's not that we are against a person being, you know, an individual in the sense of being a free thinker or taking it from a different angle. It's just that they may have their own agenda already set, and when we don't, or when a group doesn't conform to their agenda, then they bail or start their own group.
And the interesting thing about
start their own churches, you know.
Yeah. The interesting thing about the communication thing is that is the number one reason why we have either lost or dismissed members on the Spirit Team. And it will continue to be on Paranexus Research Foundation. I mean, if members don't communicate, they're gone. It's just that simple. And it's not going to be such an issue with Paranexus Research Foundation because we have such extraordinarily high standards. You don't apply to join it, you're invited. And so it's not going to be such an issue. But with most groups, it is an issue. With Spirit Team, it was an issue for the last 3 years that people just don't, like Grant said, they figure out what it's all really about, and then they fade. You can try to contact them. They won't take your emails. They won't respond. They won't take your calls. They're just gone. And so it is a huge deal, and it just astounds me how many times that happens. It's like, why not call me and say, hey, Doug, it just wasn't what I thought it was going to be, and I'm going to, you know, just go ahead and pass and decline to continue. I'd say, okay, I understand and respect that, but you don't even hear anything. The number,
well, you know, there's a real similarity between it, Doug, and scuba diving. When I used to teach scuba diving, there were a lot of people that would come into a scuba diving class for all the wrong reasons, or there were people there that, like, you know, it's just like jumping out of an airplane. You only want to do it once, and, you know, they can, you know, for whatever their personal reward is, they can go and say, I was on a ghost hunt, you know, or I experienced this, or I did it. And so I think there's a similarity there with some members, don't you?
Yeah. I do. It's the same principle. It's just communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Just communicate. I'm typing and talking. Can you do that at once? I don't know.
Sometimes.
Anyway,
sometimes.
Let's go on to number three, not delegating. For founder director, delegation is an important factor in what you do. There is a ton of things to take care of when you run a paranormal research group. Everything from the website to communications, like such as newsletters or inter-team communications, or just managing your team, training, coaching, educating, dealing with clients, handling cases, dealing with evidence review, filing. I mean, there's a zillion things. I mean, you take a website alone, there is a ton of stuff to do just with the website. A website is never finished. It just evolves. It always needs something here and there. And so a lot of members don't quite appreciate all the things that a founder director does. It's just too transparent. They just don't, it's not obvious all the time. And I'm not complaining about that. It's just, it is what it is. But for the founder director, they need to delegate certain things so that the load is not on them, so that the tail is not wagging the dog, so to speak. So if you're a founder director, ask yourself, what can you delegate? What things can you assign? Members are in this for a reason. They want to help. They want to learn. They want to grow. And delegation is a great, great way to train your people. Show them how to do it. Let them do it. And speaking of delegation, we're going to be coming up here on number seven in a moment of micromanaging. I want to tie that in. And I want to make this very important point. Don't micromanage. Now, how do you know whether or not you're a micromanager? Here's how you know. There's only one time that you should tell your people how to do a job, and that is when you're training them. If you routinely tell your people how to do a job, in addition to what you want done, you are micromanaging. Fine, tell them what you want done, but don't typically tell them how if you've already trained them on it. Micromanagers do that all the time. So I just tied the delegation into point number seven. Delegation's number three, micromanaging's number seven. I skipped ahead. Let's go to number four. Not allowing members to shine. Give your people an opportunity to shine. They've got ideas. Let others know, yeah, that was Tom's idea. That was Jack's idea. That was Julie's idea. Let your members shine and encourage them to. Connected to that is number five, not giving credit where credit is due. Now, how many managers have you known that the only time you can get an idea to fly is when the manager thinks they're the one who came up with it? Well, that's a very common issue in the business world. So, you know, give your members credit. Always credit them when it's due. Number six, not asking for member input or listening to members' ideas. If you run a team, then run a team. In other words, get everybody's input onto things. If you have a strong preference, something you want to do, lay it out on the table and show why. And hopefully, if you've attracted the right kind of members, they're going to see the rationality of what you want to do. Let's go on to, we've talked about number seven already, micromanaging. And let's see, we've got number eight, not sharing the leadership. Ties right in with everything we're talking about here. I believe in shared leadership, which is completely opposite of micromanaging. Share the leadership. How do you share the leadership? Two ways. You involve your people and you communicate. Get their feedback, get their ideas, implement ideas that are good, that make sense. Share the leadership. When possible, make group decisions as a group or team decisions as a group. If you've got something to do, get their input, get everybody on board. That's the best way, because you probably have heard the old adage, a person convinced against their will is of the same opinion still. So try to get buy-in. That's going to encourage the ownership attitude. And the opposite of the ownership attitude is the entitlement attitude. I'm entitled to this. I'm entitled to that. And you see that so much in the business world. Now, there is a question from Sharon in the chat room, which I think is a good question. And her question is there anyone that does this alone? Would that work? In my opinion, the answer is yes to both. There are people who do investigations alone. They might occasionally get consultants or people to go with them here and there when necessary. Would it work? Yeah, I think it'll work. And I've changed my thinking on this quite a bit, even over the last week or so or 2 weeks, because one of the things that we're doing with Paranexus is we are rolling out a field investigator network. Now, you always, no matter what investigation you're going on, you always use your own good judgment. Use good sense. If you go into a place that you really should have others with you, then make that happen. Get other people to go with you. There could be other team members. They could be, and I'm talking about somebody who's not really on a team or doesn't have a group of their own, but get somebody to go with you. You're bound to know somebody in the field, so if you need the help, get people. Now, there are also other cases, such as UFO reports, that you can probably go and handle alone. So there's going to be some conditions tied to the field investigator network, but generally speaking, people are going to be able to go and do an investigation on their own. Good question, Sharon. Thanks.
The only difficulty is, though, Doug, you know, what if you see something and you don't have anybody else there to validate it?
I mean,
that's the only downside to that one. But, you know, it's not impossible, because, you know, look at how we've evolved and how we approach a lot of our investigations. So,
well, let's explore that. And I understand what you're saying. In fact, the thought crossed my mind. Yeah, Doug, what if you see something? But let's think about it. Okay, you got two investigators. They are doing a vigil on a haunting case, let's imagine, and they see an apparition. Honestly, how much more credibility is there versus one scene? I mean, Grant, if you told me you saw an apparition, I believe you. You know why? Because I know you, and I know you're credible, and I know you're honest. If you and Gregory, for example, said you saw it, I'm not going to believe it any more than I would if you told me. And that's just me. Now, what about the rest of the world? Look at the Phoenix Lights, for crying out loud. How many hundreds of people saw the Phoenix Lights? There were many, many people who saw that back in 1997, correct? Hundreds of people. What has it done for anybody? Yeah, you got a lot of people who've witnessed it, and yes, that tends to add credibility, but it doesn't necessarily explain it. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely.
So that's why sure. I have come backed off, I guess, a little bit on on how important. Now, if you are on an investigation and there are people with you, you always don't go alone anywhere. You know, try to keep it to at least two people if you've got people around. And again, I'm going to fall back on use your own good judgment. Make good decisions. All right, back to our list. Number 9, being consistent, unpredictable, and moody is a mistake that founders and directors make, along with a huge number of managers. I'll repeat it, being inconsistent, unpredictable, and moody. If you want to absolutely decimate the morale of your team overnight, then be moody. Be unpredictable. For leaders, one of the greater qualities of great leaders is that they are predictable. They are consistent, and they're fair. Be predictable. Be consistent. If today you handle a very serious issue with a team member with a rational head, and tomorrow you blow up over some mundane, pointless issue, and that's kind of your pattern, people will never come to you with anything, and they will eventually leave your group. Number 10, another mistake that founders and directors make, having too many members or taking too many members on investigations. I know Grant probably doesn't have much to add to that one.
Amen to that.
Preach it, brother.
Yes. Hallelujah. Can I get a witness out there in the audience?
Don't start singing.
Oh, I promise I won't.
So what do you think about that, Grant?
I've kind of harped on this before. I really think that it's really essential that you don't have a lot of people. I think you can do it in stages, and I think that you can do it in a manner that let's just go on the assumption that if there is anything paranormal in nature or this anomalous phenomena, whatever it is, can sense or feel or pick up on energies. If you go in there stampeding with a whole bunch of people, I just think that whatever's there is going to be gone. And I also think that it's more productive to have a smaller contingent of people when you go in and do an investigation because the atmosphere is more relaxed. You can accomplish the same things you could with three people that you maybe wouldn't be able to accomplish with 10. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I think it's really, if you're serious about doing this, and I think most groups will come to the point where they will also evolve to that, to the position that we're at, and that the fewer the better.
And in that same vein, at the CFPI course, one of the things that I teach in that course is this. Every person at the investigation should have a good reason to be there. If there is not a good reason for somebody to be there, then they're not there. And that goes for clients as well, because you know how it happens. So often the client, you'll schedule the investigation, and you show up, and the client's invited their neighbor and their sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, nephews, brother, and everybody in between. They all think it's this cool thing. So, of course, to try to dissuade that, you always make sure the client understands that nobody really extra is going to be there. Everybody should have a reason to be on the investigation, to be there. If they don't have a reason, then they're not there. It's a real simple concept. So we've examined 10 of these so far, and what I would like to do is extend an invitation. We have three students in the chat room that are listening to this broadcast that are taking the CFPI course, and I know they've gotten some good things out of it from the feedback. So if you are a student and you would like to share some of what you've gotten from the CFPI course, please give us a shout. Give us a call. The number is there on your screen. You can even use that click-to-talk deal. And I guess I need to
You know, Doug, before we went on the air, we were kind of talking about this. And one of the things that I really like about this course is the fact that it kind of gets you – and I think you kind of expand on what folks did in the CPI course, in that you take a good look at who we are as people and what brings us to this, and you do a lot of self-reflection with this and try to teach our the folks that are interested in being the leaders of these groups to be self-reflective, to always kind of reevaluate where you're coming from and how your particular stance in any time influences the outcome of an investigation, how you interact with other folks, how you interact with a client, how you conceive of your own belief system, and how you either incorporate it or disregard it.
Yes.
It's absolutely essential. And it's nothing that's really magical or that we don't know, but it's all about the human dynamics. And I think the parallel is so interesting because that's what a lot of times these folks are going to find when they're out doing investigations is the psychology that we've talked about so many times. And this is going to help them in so many, many ways. Sorry, I got a little long-winded there.
No, that's fine. And actually it ties in well with the question in the chat. If there is a disagreement in how to handle something, how can that be resolved in a diplomatic manner? Well, there's a couple of aspects of that. Number one, every group should have a set of standards and protocols that at least address some of the more serious issues of how you approach things in your group. In the CFPI course, there's an example of standards and protocols that now even includes the sexual harassment policy, because that, frankly, has happened on groups, too.
Mm-hmm.
So, how do you handle a disagreement? If there's some disagreement, well, it's like any relationship in life. If you have two rational adult individuals, they can discuss it and work out an arrangement. If one person's point of view is clearly superior, the other person humbly defers to the better choice. It's not about shame. It's not about who's right. And that's another part of human nature. One of the aspects of human nature is the need to be right. And we've got to release that. It doesn't matter who's right or wrong. It's not about who's right or wrong. It's about the best way to go about it. And so how can you resolve it in a diplomatic manner? Be an adult. Don't be a high schooler.
Well, you know what else, too, what's really important, Doug, is that I think that when folks, potential group founders, need to understand that there's a group, the development of a research group requires some evolution. And what happens is that when you get the right combination of people, and we were very fortunate in the Spirit team, and we're extremely fortunate with Paranexus, the group of folks that we have around us. But in the Spirit team, yeah, we had our disagreements from time to time. But I would say overall, everybody was looking from the same perspective at how we approached the investigations, and also the thing that was really important was that. When we had new people that came in, they weren't automatically, you know, part of the group. They had to go through a probationary period because a person may come and they had to be a good fit for the group. And the wonderful thing about that is when you have a good foundation, a good nucleus to a group, you'll know whether that person's a good fit. It's not going to take you, maybe more than one or two investigations to know whether that person's going to be a good fit with your group. I firmly believe that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if you get somebody that's coming there and at first, you know, I mean, look, if you have a new person that comes on an investigation, we all welcome them, we all want them there, but if all of a sudden that person starts doing stuff that's totally out of character for the team, like starts telling people where to set up equipment or how to do that, or I know there's a demon in the room, or, you know, whatever, I mean, that speaks a thousand words, that speaks volumes. Most people, if you go on an investigation your first time, you're going to be there to observe, listen, and try to learn. So, I mean, if you start getting that, you know, and other members of your team are having friction with somebody like that, well, you know, may not be a good fit.
Yeah.
And I mean, we've had we've had people that have come in like that and left and gone and started their own group.
Mm-hmm. And that ties in with the follow-up question: can a disagreement be resolved while a client is present? Does this affect credibility? Well, a disagreement, it really depends on the depth of it. If it's just a minor thing, sure, like a discussion. Hey, why don't we do this? Well, how about this? Do you think this might work better? Oh, yeah, that would. I wasn't even thinking. Yeah, let's do that. That's a disagreement that was quickly resolved, and there is no issue with the client. However, any kind of a serious disagreement should never be handled in front of the client. In fact, if a team member did that, I would politely say, you know, you might have a point. Now, notice my language here. You know, you could have a point. Let's go out and discuss this. And I would remove them from the presence of the client, and I would hear them out. And even if they were right, if they managed that improperly in front of the client, that wouldn't be a good thing. It would not be a good thing. And depending on the nature of it, I would certainly say something. Great, I understand your point. Next time, pull me aside and never say something like that in front of the client again. And now this, if it's not too terribly serious. If it was serious, they would be dismissed on the spot. Because frankly, I don't have the time, the energy to deal with adults or people who should be adults but are really still teenagers in development.
Well, you know, one of the strengths that we had as a spirit team, and, you know, this is something that I would strongly encourage all potential group leaders or groups out there to take into consideration is when we did an investigation, even in the old days when we had more than, you know, three people on the investigation, we would do our vigils, we would do our baseline readings, we would do whatever each person had been assigned, and then at the conclusion of that time frame, a pre-designated time, we would all meet together outside of the residence facility or whatever, where at that point in time, without the client being present, we would discuss what our initial reactions were, what our impressions were, and just generally try to get a feel for what everybody's thinking. We never, and if you go about it that way, that situation can be avoided entirely.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
where you might be challenged by a client, or where you might be well, let me give one example, Doug, without getting too long-winded.
Sure.
We had a group member one time who we did an investigation, and the people that were on that we were investigating were firm believers that they had anomalous phenomena going on there. We could find nothing that supported that contention. And yet one of the members who was participating in our investigation, we noticed, both Doug and I noticed, that they were giving the clients, through their facial expressions, mixed messages that were telling them that,
right,
yes, I do pick up something. I don't know about them. And so
right,
that was very, very that was the first time that had happened to us, and
mm-hmm,
we were very concerned because when we left that investigation, those folks were firmly entrenched in their beliefs. We had done nothing. We knew we couldn't change those belief systems, but
right,
by the same token, we found nothing significant there. So my guess is, Doug, and I'm sure you agree with me, that we weren't the last group that went there.
Oh,
but
I'm
that
sure
one
not.
Member's behavior, that one member's behavior, and I don't think it was meant out of malice or,
mm-hmm,
you know, or anything else. It was just poor judgment,
mm-hmm,
showed that we were not united in our stance and what we were trying to help them out with.
Because
hence
the member was playing psychic. It was playing psychic, and,
right,
and this
right,
member was not a psychic, and yet gave that impression to the client, and so they were basically looking to this person as the authority on it when this person was in no way the authority, and frankly, that person never went on another investigation. Now, just to tie in three more points from our 21, and then we're going to talk to Jen, who I believe is on the line. Number 11, not showing members respect and dignity. Always show respect and dignity. And that means, number 12, not yelling at members. Don't ever yell at a member for any reason. Number 13, criticizing members, especially in public. Don't go there. And unfortunately, that happens. Let's pause with the list for just a moment. And I believe we have Jen on the phone. Is that you, Jen?
That's me. Oh, hold on one second.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you guys?
Hey.
Real good.
Good. Good to hear from you. Nice to talk to you.
One of our favorite team members out of Tampa. Nice to hear from you, Jen. Jen?
Oh, it's great to talk to you guys.
Yeah, I'm glad you called. So tell us about some of the points that you're picking up that, frankly, you've applied to just more than a group, because you don't, at this point in time, you're not a group founder or director, but you do have a place to apply some of these points, correct?
Absolutely. At my day job, I'm actually a project manager in an engineering firm, and so a lot of the things that I've learned, I've been applying to great success. And, you know, honestly, the kind of stuff you're teaching in the class is stuff that are just great life skills that everybody could benefit from. And, you know, you talk a lot about...
Remind me to pay her later.
Your check's in the mail, Jen.
All right, excellent. But, yeah, you talk a lot about working with human nature and, you know, giving specific examples on how to do that and how to create buy-in from the people you're working with so that they understand why what you're asking them to do is good not only for you, the one asking it, but it's good for themselves and it's good for the team.
Yep, that's the way to go about it. So you've gotten some good responses by changing the approach, correct?
Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry, I'm still getting a little bit over a cold. But I have a rather direct personality. And so I've had in the past instances where that didn't necessarily, that approach didn't work the way I would hope it would, of course. And so one of the things that I've learned in the class is some new techniques to use in terms of communicating with people and using things like word softeners so that you have a way of presenting things so that they're more easily accepted and you get the response that you do want.
That's a good point, and that's one of the things that I've been teaching the leaders for years, word softeners. It's like if you've ever gone to a nice banquet somewhere. I mean, I'm talking about a catered banquet where they have a chef. You know, when the food comes out, it may taste like crap, but damn, it looks beautiful. I mean, they bring out the dessert, and it's got all these little syrupy striped things. I mean, the thing looks beautiful. Presentation's everything. And word softeners go a long way to just asking. Another part of that is asking people to do things instead of telling. You know, nobody likes to be told what to do, but people don't mind being asked to do something. Well, I'm glad you're getting some good stuff out of it, Jen, and I appreciate you calling in and sharing some of that. I know you'll continue to do great.
Oh, thank you. And just one more thing I wanted to touch on. And
sure.
This is
please.
One point that I think will definitely stick with me forever is the way you always say that lack of communication will kill any relationship. And if you really think about that and apply it to not only working with a team, but in every aspect of your life, it's a very profound statement, and it's you know, something that we probably all should know, but until you actually hear it and think about it that way, it doesn't really sink in.
Yeah, I know. A lot of that stuff doesn't sink in until you're ready. That's true with all of us. You know, we can hear something time after time after time. Finally, when we're ready, it takes hold.
Right.
Well, I appreciate it, Jen, and you take care, and we'll talk to you soon.
It's nice
thanks
hearing from you,
in.
Jen. Thanks for
great
calling.
Coming, guys. All right, take care.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, the thing of it is, Doug, is that a lot of times if you get a good group, I mean, you know, everybody's got the same vision, and this isn't, you know, I mean, I can't ever think of any serious disagreements we ever had with anybody that led to any verbal clashes or anything like that. For the most part, everybody's all on the same page. You know, because everybody
except for
is,
that one time you, that you yelled at me and I cried.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. I mean, I'm sorry about that. I was hoping you wouldn't bring that up on the air, but since you have now.
No, wait
I'll
a minute.
Get
I think
later.
I yelled at you and you cried. Cried like a baby.
Hey, you promised you weren't going to tell anybody about that. For that vast
I'm
audience
sorry.
Out there, coast to coast, you just told them that I'm a softie. So, oh, well, gosh, what could I do? But, you know, we've never really had that many problems
no.
with folks in terms of acting foolish or doing stuff that we didn't we thought was way out of kilter. It's just more or less once you got some good people on board, how to keep them satisfied, how to make and how to work, make your group work for the best, get the best out of every person that's part of that group, and maximizing their potential.
Yep, absolutely. Let's go on with our list. Number 14, not holding members to accountability. In other words, allowing members to get away with things they shouldn't. That's one of the mistakes that not only managers make, but founders and directors. Now, let me see if I can convey this in the proper perspective. My approach to dealing with people is rather simple. I'm going to give members the benefit of the doubt, and everybody for that matter, until they give me a reason not to. If a member tells me something, I'm going to believe them until they give me a reason not to. And that doesn't mean I'm going to be credulous or gullible or stupid. It just means that I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt until they give me a reason not to. Now, when a member does something, they need to be held to accountability. Now, you can hold people to accountability in a very harsh way, or you can do it in a kind way. I choose to do it in a kind way. I bring it up and I discuss it. How about, for example, this one, Lisa? I sent you an email 3 days ago and I haven't heard back from you. I'm curious as to why. Oh, I've been too busy and haven't checked. Well, Lisa, you're the case manager, and one of the demands of that position is that you check your email at least twice a day. Can I ask why you didn't? Now, I have held Lisa to accountability, but it was in a very kind way. Yeah, it was direct, but it was still kind, and I used word softeners to do so. And then she might say, well, you're right. I just should have checked. I say, hey, I understand how things come up. Can I ask you to just take a moment and check email at least twice a day from now on? Yes, great. I really appreciate that. And if there's ever any problem again, be sure and let me know right away. You know, that kind of a thing. But notice that I also asked for a commitment. I didn't just bring it up. I got my commitment. I said, can I ask you to go ahead and check email twice a day from now on? Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. It was handled very well, and that's holding a member to accountability. Number 15 goes along with that, not enforcing the team's standards and protocols. If you put together your standards and protocols, you should have done so for very definite reasons. And if you don't enforce those, you're going to be sending a huge message to your team that's just worthless paper. It's not even worth anything. So enforce those. Number 16, not getting to know members as human beings, including discovering members' motivations. As a group leader, you need to study human nature. People never do things that they don't see a benefit in doing, period. That's human nature. People only do the things they see a benefit in doing. Well, if you've got members, yes, they're volunteers, so they obviously have some interest in it, but what do they want? What are their motivations? Who are they as human beings? You need to find that out through your coaching and training, your feedback sessions. Find out what they want. Maybe you've got a member who is rather new but would like to be a case manager at some point. You need to discover that. Or maybe they want to be a technical manager. Or maybe they want to study the forensic side of things. And you need to find those out so that you can train them you can coach them and groom them in that direction. So get to know them. Number 17, not developing themselves or their members, and that includes training. So one of the mistakes that founders and directors make, they don't develop themselves. Oh, here's another one. Folks, think about personal development. Now, there's obviously a lot of people who are into personal growth, and they read some of the books, and they do some of the things, and they benefit from it. But there is an awful lot of people out there who don't give a second thought to personal development. And what's the result? They have crappy relationships. They have crappy jobs. Everything's crappy. It's not where it should be. Take this to the paranormal field. People who don't develop themselves, what do we see? We see a whole bunch of infighting, bickering, backbiting, competitiveness between groups. It's unbelievable. I don't know that I've ever seen the degree of fighting and bickering and competitiveness that I have seen in the paranormal field. I may not be a good judge of that, but I've seen a lot of it, and I continue to see a lot of it. Jealousies, petty jealousies. It's just unbelievable. And I'm thinking, what the hell? What's wrong with these people? We're all in this together. We're all seeking the same thing. You know, we've got way too many egos involved. Everybody wants the latest TV show, and everybody seems to have the latest TV show except, well, me. Everybody does, and it's like that's all I hear anymore. You know, I've got a documentary, they're wanting me on that, and I've got this TV show we're going to, and yet you never see them on the screen. So lose the egos and develop yourself. Learn what it means to be a leader. Learn what it means to have healthy relationships, because if you know who you are and why you are who you are, you know what? You pretty much got it made. Most people don't know who they are, and they don't know why they are who they are. They have them esteem, not self-esteem. In other words, they only feel good about themselves when everybody else thinks they're doing a good job. But when the world thinks they're not doing a good job, they feel bad about themselves. People with self-esteem and a healthy self-concept validate themselves. They don't need or care about what other people think so much to feel good about themselves. And Grant, you jump in if you've got any thoughts. I'm just talking along here.
No, I'm just you know, okay, listening and agreeing with you, nodding my head, because it's absolutely crucial. I think, you know, another way to illustrate that is, you know, you may get somebody that wants to apply beyond your group, and they look really good to begin with, and you take them on an investigation, it seems to be working out, and then, you know, all of a sudden they're gone. And, you know, we had that something like that happen recently, and when we met, and this person, when I met that person on an investigation, I think that they had some issues themselves that when they were on the actual investigation, that they really had a hard time dealing with. Maybe they had their own fears, their own experiences that they'd had in the past, or what they might have perceived to be paranormal. And I think that sometimes that does happen. You do get people that are like that, and it's almost like the moth to the flame. Wouldn't you agree, Doug? And then they mm-hmm. find that, gosh, maybe this is a little bit too scary. In retrospect, I think a healthier investigator is going to be the one that, if a bump goes off someplace, is the one that's grabbing the flashlight or grabbing the digital recorder and saying, show me where it is. As opposed to the person that's coming there to validate their fears or their own secret belief system, which may be that mm-hmm. people can be possessed based on, no offense to our Christian friends, or beliefs that may be based in religious doctrine that they can't, you know, mm-hmm. somehow transcend.
Well, that breeds fear. I mean, when I was a Christian, I was afraid to death of demons and ghosts and spirits, and it was irrational. It was inculcated in me from babyhood, from infancy. And you know, when you begin to learn and you begin to educate yourself, those kinds of fears leave, because you realize that it's not true. and I'm not going to get too into that, but let's go and take a question from the chat room.
But you know what, Doug, though? Go ahead. Before you take the question, what you get at is you've got such a deeply ingrained kernel or belief system that they can't transcend that belief system. And you're going to get people that are going to come into your groups that, you know, not everybody, but you're likely to have folks like that from time to time. And that's their baggage.
Yes, definitely. All right. The question from the chat room, are there any special problems in having family members on a team? That goes to anything. If the family members are stable and adults and they can handle themselves as adults, then no, there's no problem. We've had a number of people who are family members, not an issue. However, and this is one of the things that I state in our standards and protocols, you know, for example, a married couple comes on the team and they end up having problems and end up separating and divorcing, you know, that could have ramifications for their membership. Obviously, one of them is going to leave voluntarily, if not both of them. So, you're going to have to pay the consequences of that, if that's what it is. But no, I don't have a problem with family members. All right, let's take number 18 of the list. Being so preoccupied with getting, quote, things done that the founder neglects members. This goes back to communication, training, coaching, and being involved with your members. One of the issues of things don't do anything for us per se. Let me rephrase it in this way. Maybe it'll be clearer. The only reason we do, quote, things, unquote, is to benefit somebody. If there were no people around, the things wouldn't matter. So it's just a matter of having your priorities straight. Don't neglect members. Stay in touch. Coach, train them. Number 19, another mistake that founders and directors make. Using subtle threats embedded in regular sounding conversation that reminds members that they could be dismissed. Never threaten your members. Never threaten them, even subtly, with their membership. Now, not everybody does that. It's probably not quite as common, but it does happen. I've seen it, and it happens in the business world as well. Number 20, going along with delegation. A mistake is not explaining the benefits of a delegated task. For example, how about evidence review? You know, that's probably one of the big things that people realize. It's that wake-up call when you're in paranormal research. If you have got a lot of video or audio to review, that can take hours. And, of course, as part of training, we require that everybody participates in that. And if you have something that needs to be reviewed and you've delegated that to somebody, don't forget to point out the benefits if necessary. What are the benefits of reviewing evidence? Well, we might get something significant that will maybe put a piece of that puzzle in place so we can understand it better. And number 21, working against human nature. In the CFPI course, I enumerate 14 different traits of human nature that leaders need to keep in mind. And that's something that if you know that, if you have an understanding of that human nature, you can work with it. Never, never, ever fight against human nature. Because if you fight against human nature, you will lose. Every single time, hands down. Let me quickly tell you some of the traits of human nature that I put together. Here's number one, the need to only do what one sees a benefit in doing. And I've already talked about that one. Number two, the need for meaning, purpose, and belonging. Now, this can be healthy or unhealthy. So work with that. Number three, the need for appreciation and recognition. We all need a pat on the back at times. Of course, some people are very high maintenance and needy, and that's not healthy. Number four, the need to understand and to be understood. People need to express themselves, and they need that to be understood. Number five, the need for challenge and accomplishment, which is generally healthy. We all have that. Number six, the need for control. Now, this one can be healthy or unhealthy, too. We all like to be in control. So if you ask people their opinions, you're, in essence, helping them to remain in control. If you communicate with people, especially about changes, and get their input, you're helping them to remain in control. Number seven, the propensity to resist change. There's a lot of people who resist change, and that's not healthy. It's generally unhealthy to resist change because life is about change, and it sounds so simple, and it is, and yet people still continue to resist change. Number eight, the need to believe. Oh, people want to believe. All you got to do is look at the paranormal field in general, and you see a ton of people who have to believe. They want to believe, and that can be healthy or unhealthy. Number nine, the need for hope. This is a big one. People need hope. How can you apply that to your team? If the cases are a bit sparse at the moment, what can you do to give them hope that things will change? Can you organize something, a training excursion or something on that order? Number 10, the tendency to take the path of least resistance, in other words, instant gratification, a.k.a. laziness, right? We all want to take that path of least resistance. Number 11, the need to be right, which I mentioned earlier, and it's generally unhealthy. Number 12, the need to blame, which we see so much of in the paranormal field, also unhealthy. Number 13, the need for secrets and exclusivity. Now think about that one for a minute. Think about the Freemasons. Think about all these secret groups, even in the paranormal field. Oh, we're not going to share our data. It's secret. I don't want your clients' names. I just want to know if you found anything. And the last one I'm going to talk about here, which is the last one of the list of human nature, number 14, the tendency to procrastinate, which is obvious. We all know that one. All right. So in this last hour, we have talked about 21 mistakes that founders and directors make. We've talked about some different leadership techniques, taken some of your questions. Next week, we don't have anybody scheduled as of yet. I'm not sure that we will. If we don't have anybody scheduled, then we're going to probably carry this conversation on a little bit further. If you, our listeners, have a topic you would like to discuss, we're all ears. You know, we try our best to get great guests on, and Grant handles that a lot. He's done an excellent job of that. We've had some great guests. And, of course, it's coming up to the end of the year and the holiday season and so forth. It's a little tougher to get guests. But if you know somebody or you have a topic, we'd love to hear from you. And we appreciate those of you who are tuning in each week. Grant, you got anything you want to...
No, I can't elaborate any more on what you've said tonight. I think that for all you folks that are taking the course, that you're going to find it extremely valuable. Never stop looking to find the best in the people that surround you, because we're all here for the same purpose. And once you get the good nucleus of groups, y'all going to do just fine. And with the tips that you'll find in that course, you can't go wrong. So it's a wonderful course, and it's great to have folks of the caliber that are taking that course involved with us. Mm-hmm. And we want to let other folks or other people in the community, paranormal community, know that they can also help get their people far better trained by just having the option through Paranexus Academy, and that's the whole purpose. Mm-hmm. Try to make it better for everybody. So yeah, and everybody, it's always great.
And I just want to point out that that's what I do secularly. I am a leadership trainer and consultant. So what I've done is taken the things that I have learned and developed over the past several years, many years, and from my own experiences in leading people and owning businesses and so forth, and I've adapted them to paranormal research groups. So it's kind of my forte there. Anyway, just wanted to make a couple of announcements here regarding Paranexus, as you know, and I've announced and put in the newsletter that we're making some adjustments to Paranexus. We're trying to broaden certain things and narrow other things, such as the forum. We've opened that up. You don't any longer have to be a Paranexus member to be a member of the forum. You can be a forum member and not be a Paranexus member. As far as membership rates, we have reduced those for the time being. They've now come down to $20 per year. And anybody who had purchased the $30 package, we have already doubled your membership just as a thank you for supporting us. And we do appreciate members and their support because that helps us to continue doing what we're doing. And what we've got coming down the pike, I think, is exciting, and I think it's going to be very popular, and that is the Field Investigator Network. We're doing some work on getting the ufology course going and completed, and then we're going to open it up to get field investigators out there all around the world, hopefully. They will be highly trained and great people, great investigators, and they will get the cases that we receive through the website, and hopefully that will also encourage more folks to submit sightings. The thing that I think that's going to make Paranexus researchers and investigators even better is the eclectic field, because we focus on parapsychology and ufology, as well as abductions. But if you have a broader base of knowledge that covers parapsychology as well as ufology, there's some overlaps here and there, and that can really help you to make sense out of a particular event. So I'm excited about that. Please take a look at Paranexus.org. We've given it a facelift. We've added blogs. Start your blog. We've added a new, easier gallery. And, of course, there's always Parazone TV as well for videos. So, and visit Paranexus Academy if you'd like to take the CFPI course. I am finalizing the formatting of the home study version, so that will be available in the next few days. With that having been said, again, we appreciate all of our listeners, whether you're live or listening to this archive. Grant, it was great having being with you on the show again.
It's always great being here, Doug, and I'm going to work real hard to see if we can dig up a guest someplace for next week. And my best to the audience, and thanks to all our listeners and everybody for being so supportive. We always appreciate it.
Yeah. Very much so. Everybody have a great night. Take care and happy holidays.
Amen to that.
Universe.